truth, into his word and a knowledge and obedience to his word and his truth, okay? And to his voice, the idea that we have a relationship with God. And to his people, the fact that we are connected both locally and globally to a body of Christ. It's not just me. I'm connected to a larger family of believers. And the last one is his mission. And these four things together, they're not in isolation of each other. They're all very much interwoven. It's kind of hard, actually, to preach them separately from each other because they lock into each other so much. But tonight, I'm really excited to talk about the voice of God. I'm excited to talk with you about what it means to lean in closely. And I'm not talking about some weird mystical thing tonight. I'm not. What I'm talking about is that we have a relationship with God. And whether you were at Fall Retreat this weekend or not, I want to know, our staff wants to know, that what it means to live the Christian life is not a mystery to you guys. That you can walk away from these weeks, you can see what a mature follower of Jesus looks like. That's what we've been praying for you. That's what we want for you. And so tonight we lean in a little bit to this. So in the beginning of this, I have to kind of tell you a story or two. Last year, my wife and I went on a cruise for the very first time. And this was about a year and a half ago. Life was really hectic and hard, and this doesn't happen like regularly, so I don't want you to get the picture. This is what life in ministry looks like. But a giant envelope of cash just kind of appeared, and basically with the intention of saying, hey, we know life's been rough. Go enjoy some time with your wife. And so we were like, okay. I mean, it would be bad to not use the gift. And so we booked a cruise, and it wasn't long, but I mean, it was a five-day cruise, I think. But in 16 years, I mean, we've been married for 19 years. In 16 years, we'd never been away that long from our kids. So we were gone almost a full week, and it was amazing. Not that we don't love our children. We love them very much. But we like cruises, too, apparently. Okay, so it was pretty nice. But one of the days, I could talk about that a long time. I'll keep moving. On one of the days of this cruise, you stop at a port, and we had this excursion that we were doing, this snorkeling excursion that we were going on. And so, you know, they put a bunch of us Americans in a van and trucked us out to this little remote beach. And you had to swim about 100 yards to get out to the reef. And I'm pretty sure most of the people on this excursion weren't swimming 100 yards. So this was their plan to get everybody out there, okay? They tied these giant life jackets around your waist. So you really didn't even have to swim. All you had to do was kind of kick your feet a little bit, and it would propel you forward, and you could sit, and you could look down at all this stuff. And so that's what they, and there were, it was kind of sad. There were three or four people that even that plan wouldn't really, it made them too nervous to be that far out, even with a life. I don't know why they paid for an excursion when they were scared to be in water. But for three or four people, it didn't work out. The rest of us all tooled out there, and we've all got the life jackets, so you're able to just kind of lay on your stomach and float, and you're looking down. And about 100 yards out, the reef starts, and it's gorgeous. I mean, it's the set of Finding Nemo, pretty much, that we're out above. It's just a beautiful coral reef, and there are fish swimming everywhere, like sea turtles, and oh, you know, the conch shells, those beautiful ones that you see in touristy shops, those are just littering the bottom. They're all over the place. And the guy had told us beforehand, he said, hey, our rule is that if it's alive, you shouldn't touch it or take it. But if it isn't, it's yours. Like, you can take it home with you. So if you find a big shell or something, or you find a dead piece of coral, you're welcome to take that with you, okay? But here's the thing. We get out, and the reef is about 20 feet down, and I'm tooling along on the surface, and it's driving me crazy because it's all down there. I mean, we can see the fish, and they're kind of coming up. That's not what I want to do. I love to snorkel. And so it took me about 5 minutes before I paddled. One of our guides was in a kayak, and I paddled up to him, and I was like, man, can I get rid of the life jacket around my waist? And he goes, can you swim well? I was like, yeah. He said, I don't care. So I was like, sweet. So I untied that thing, and I threw it in his kayak, and I dove, you know? And as opposed to just tooling along on the surface up there, I was able to go down and interact. And unfortunately, I will tell you, because I checked a lot of them, there was not one conch shell that didn't have something living in it, either a crab or a giant snail or something else, because I checked every one of them that was on the reef very thoroughly. And I couldn't take any of them home with me. But I went from tooling along on the surface and being able to see it, which was an experience. It was pretty cool, don't get me wrong, but it is not what I wanted. I wanted to be able to go deeper. I think you might get the metaphor, right? Calvin Miller, who's an author that I adore, he wrote this quote once, because, I mean, I know that I got to dive, but still, can you imagine if I was able to have a scuba tank on and I could have just stayed down there and interacted and even gone deeper? Deeper. Thank you, Cam. Sound man's right with me. If I could have had scuba tanks on, I even get to go a level deeper than that. And Calvin Miller said this. He said, the church is full of snorkelers talking to snorkelers about scuba diving experiences. In other words, he's saying, we want to go deep, but there are not a lot of us who are. But we talk like we are. I don't want that for you. I don't want that for me. When I was 13 years old, I came to Jesus, and it was real. It was real. I was at a camp, felt a deep conviction that my life needed to change, and I bawled my eyes out and begged Jesus to save me. And he did. And he did. But my life didn't change a lot for the next 5, 6, 7 years. I stayed very much the same. I had an experience with grace, but it was a very small taste, and I was kind of tooling along on the surface of that. And it wasn't until I was 18, 19 years old that I actually took that life jacket off and was able to go deeper and figure out what that looks like. That is a gift that I want to give you guys. I can't do it for you. Don't get me wrong. This isn't the stuff that can transform you in this tonight isn't about what the information that I have to give you. It's just an encouragement and an affirmation, probably of stuff that you already know. We'll see. So for our text tonight, we always, of course, look at the life of Jesus, right? And so typically I've had you stand in the past when we read our main text for the night. I'll go ahead and have you do that right now, and I'll read this for you. Our text comes out of Luke 5:16, and it's this. Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. You can sit back down now. That's it. You're welcome. That's my main text for the night, that Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and he prayed. Now, what does Scripture mean when it says often? Well, let me tell you what Scripture means when it says often. It means in Mark 1, Jesus spends 40 days in the wilderness. Also in Mark 1, it says, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Mark 3 and Luke 6 talk about Jesus going out to a mountainside and spending the night praying. Matthew 14 talks about after John the Baptist is killed, who was very close to Jesus, Jesus goes by himself to a solitary place. Mark 6, Jesus dismisses the crowds and goes up to the mountainside to pray. Luke 22 tells us that the Mount of Olives is a spot that Jesus goes to with regularity. Often we're told that he goes alone. Sometimes we're told that he goes with some of the disciples. Sometimes he takes all the disciples. It says in a number of different places that he went to escape the crowds, sometimes by foot, sometimes by boat. Sometimes it talks about them singing together. Or if I could sum it up, Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and he prayed. That's what it means. This was a regular thing in Jesus' life, where he went and he met with the Father. Now, I don't think a lot of us, I don't know, some of us anyway, would ask that question of, okay, well, Jesus went to pray. But what is prayer then? What is prayer exactly? Well, if we look at the word prayer in the New Testament, it's this word proseko, and it has these definitions, which are all really the same, okay? To hold the mind towards, to pay attention to, and to put your attention toward. I'll use the last one because I think it just sums up the other two pretty well, to put your attention towards something. So, let me give you this example. Do I have somebody who's not scared to death to, Lucas, how you doing there, man? All right, so let's say that, you okay role-playing with me for a second? Okay, he said timidly. Let's say that you had a really rough day in a class and a teacher really embarrassed you, okay? You with me there? I want you just to tell me about it, okay? Make up a story right now of your teacher being mean to you in class. Just say, Ben, this was my day today, and tell me that story. Start with, Ben, this was my day today. Now tell me about how your teacher was mean to you in class. No, go ahead. What?
You can leave.
I can leave? Why?
You're not paying attention.
You don't like me on your phone? My phone? Okay. Well, here's the thing, that if I can sum up one little space of this definition for you, I mean, any of you, you start telling a story and I break out my phone and I start doing this, you know, paying attention to other stuff, checking texts, you're done talking. If you have any backbone at all, you probably just stop. I don't know if you could hear what Lucas said. He said, you can leave, which is what you would think. You might not say it. Lucas will say it for you. So the idea in this verse is me putting my phone back in my pocket, walking up to him, and giving him my eyes and my attention, and saying, what happened? Dude, what happened in your class today? Why would your teacher do that to you? I'm engaged in the conversation. I'm listening to what's going on. He has my attention. You understand that. You understand exactly what this word is talking about. That's the core of the word prayer. There's no big mystery there. But what we're doing in prayer, what Jesus was doing in prayer, was going out of his way to turn his attention toward the Lord. Now, note a couple things in there. When you turn your attention towards something, you turn your attention away from other things. That's going to be something that we talk about toward the end of tonight. You turn your attention toward the Lord. All right. Now, this is not just a New Testament thing, all right? In the Old Testament, we had this all over the place, too. If I go back to Genesis 2, just in the beginning of creation, when everything is new, God makes the heavens and the earth. He does all his thing for 6 days, right? I'm going to assume that I don't need to read all of that for you. But on the seventh day, God had finished his work of creation, so he rested from all his work on the seventh day. And God blessed the seventh day, and he declared it holy because it was the day when he rested from his work of creation. All right, here's the crazy thing, okay? That's Genesis. So we have all these different stories in Genesis and Exodus, and so I'm just going to fly through this. Just stay with me here, okay? In Exodus, when we're talking about Sabbath, this idea, so Sabbath is just this idea of God saying, on the seventh day, you should rest. In Genesis, he did it, and then in Exodus, he tells us we should do it. But let me give you just a quick primer here. In Exodus 14, Israel escapes from Pharaoh through the Red Sea. You remember that story? In Exodus 15, the people sing a song of deliverance because Pharaoh was killed in the Red Sea. Or not Pharaoh, but his armies. And in Exodus 16, God gives them food miraculously. And you have the beginning of him saying, collect it for 6 days, but not on the seventh. Rest on the seventh. And again, he comes back to this idea of a Sabbath. Then, which really is that same idea of turning your attention toward the Lord. So Sabbath, in a lot of ways, has the same thing wrapped up in it. Is turn your attention away from the other stuff and toward me on the seventh day. Well, he keeps going. And I know I'm moving fast, but just bear with me, okay? Exodus 19, God reveals himself on Mount Sinai. In Exodus 20, the Ten Commandments are given. In the Ten Commandments, the big ten, the ones where he's saying, hey, don't kill each other. You shouldn't murder. Okay, you shouldn't commit adultery. That shouldn't be up there. And rest. Rest is in there. Rest on the seventh day, God says. The Sabbath is in there too. It's all over chapter 20. And then we keep moving. Exodus continues with instructions for the tabernacle. We get to Exodus 31, more about the Sabbath. Exodus 32, you remember the story of the golden calf? Moses comes down with the Ten Commandments, and they're already caught up in worshiping a golden calf. I forgot something about that story. This has nothing to do with my sermon, but I found this incredibly interesting as a parent. Do you want to, you may not have known this. Moses was so infuriated by what they did that he had the ground calf ground into a powder and put into their drinking supply, and everybody had to drink it. That was part of the punishment. Part of the punishment was they had to drink the golden calf they made. Amazing. Okay, anyway, back to Sabbath. Exodus 34, Moses comes down the mountain with a new Ten Commandments because the first ones had been smashed by him when he was angry at the people. And in Exodus 34 and 35, we have more examples of the Sabbath. It's time after time after time after time in Exodus. You're reading it, and it just seems like you're in a completely different spot. And then it comes back to, oh yeah, by the way, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. In Exodus and Leviticus, just in those two books, the Sabbath is brought up more than 35 times. Over and over again. Turn your attention toward me. So we have this idea Old Testament. We have this idea New Testament. It's right there. And it begs us the question, if God has been so interested all along with us getting to know more about him and who he is, then I have to ask the question, how much time do you spend turning your attention away from other things and toward him? Most of the mission trips that we do, people come back and say, it was awesome. I don't think it's because Phil plans good mission trips, so Molly, they plan good mission trips, but I'm telling you, it's not our planning that makes them awesome. The retreat this weekend, I thought it was awesome. It's not because we're the best planners in the world. Do you want to know why this weekend was awesome? It's because we prayed our guts out, and we intentionally turned our attention toward the Lord, and we said, this weekend is yours. It's holy. It belongs to you. We don't do that often. Well, I really mean we. I mean you and I. We need that encouragement. We need that encouragement to go deeper and further together with that. That thunder? Here's where this, I just need to let you know, this is not a knowing sermon. I cannot put ideas in your head that will make this happen. This is a doing kind of sermon. I have some homework for you tonight, and I want to lead you toward that. Brennan Manning is a guy I have mad respect for. He died 2 or 3 years ago, maybe not that long. But I had the privilege of hearing him speak a few times, read a lot of his books. I learned more about grace from that man, even though I only met him. By met him, I mean I said, hi, thank you, Brennan, and he nodded. That's my relationship with him, okay? So I'm not implying there was a deep relationship there, but through his books, he mentored me a lot on what grace is. And he told this story once at a conference that I was at, and it stuck with me a long time. He said that there was a man who was in the hospital, and he was dying. It's a real story. This is not made up. There's a man in the hospital who's dying, and there's nothing left that they can do. So his doctors send him home with his daughter so he can live out his last few days with her. And the daughter contacts this priest and says, my dad doesn't have long to live. He's requested that you come and talk to him. Would you mind doing that? And the priest said, absolutely. I don't know if the priest was Brennan Manning or not, but in this story. So the priest goes to the man's house and goes to the man's bedroom. And the man asks his daughter if she wouldn't mind leaving. And she says, sure. So she leaves the room. And he says, thank you so much for coming. I don't have a whole lot of time left. And he said, I haven't been a believer for a long time, just a few years, just the last few years of my life, I came to know who Jesus was. And he said, but I've gone, he was in the Catholic Church. He said, I went to my priest about a year and a half ago, and I told him that I didn't know how to pray. I had no idea how to pray, and I asked him to help me, and he gave me a book on prayer and told me to go home and read it. And he said, so I took that book home, and I couldn't understand it. There's like words everywhere that I had to look up, and I finally just gave it back to him and thanked him and left because I was embarrassed. I didn't know what to do. And he said, but then a friend told me that what I could do was I could pull up a chair in my room, and I could pretend that Jesus was sitting in it, and I could talk to him like a person. And he said, and I've been doing that for the last year, and it's been amazing. I have to be careful that my daughter doesn't catch me because I'm afraid she'll think that I'm going insane and hallucinating. But he said, that's what I've been doing. And he said, it just occurred to me this week that my friend might have been wrong, that I've been doing this and that this isn't what prayer is. The main reason that I called you here today was because I needed to ask you, is this prayer? Have I been praying? And the priest, of course, said, oh, yes. Absolutely, that's prayer. Absolutely, that's what you've been doing. And he thanked him, and they prayed together, and the priest left. A couple days later, he's in his office, and the daughter stops by, and she said, I just came by this morning to tell you my father passed away this morning. And she said he seemed fine this morning, and he made a couple corny jokes, and he told me he loved me, and I went to the store, and when I came back, he'd passed. And she said, but he told me this morning how much he appreciated you coming by, and that it was a great relief to him, and I wanted to tell you that. I just wanted to stop by and say thank you. And then she said, but the weirdest thing, we don't really know what to think of it. She said, when she was the one who found him. She said, when I found him, he didn't have much strength left, but he had managed to pull himself all the way across his bed And she said, he died with his head in the chair beside his bed, and our whole family doesn't know what to make of it. And the priest said, I know what to make of it. He died with his head in the lap of Jesus. That's what he has believed has been going on for the last year. He's been praying to God as if he's been sitting in that room. You guys, that's the reality of prayer. It's the presence of God beside us. It's simple. It's simple. But simple doesn't always mean easy. So what do we do? What do we do? Well, to do that, to answer that question, I'm actually going to do something a little bit weird, okay? That's going to require some audience participation. So buckle up. Here we go. And I'm going to try to write on this thing, and we'll see if this works. I want to ask you the question, in a healthy marriage, what do a husband and wife do? Pray. There we go. Somebody had that answer ready to go. They're like, Jesus. It's true. It's absolutely true. I wasn't trying to diminish it. Sorry. What else? Communicate. My writing's already bad, but the computer makes it worse, so I apologize. What else? You say trust? Yes. Respect. But more, even more than just concepts, I'm also asking week to week, what do they do? Serve together. Good. I heard hold hands. What else was there? Whoa. What else was there? There were a couple others. Love? Food. Yes, I can attest to that one. What was that? Hugs? Yes, there's affection. What else? You say gifts? Or did you say kids? Was that kids? Which was it? Gifts? Kiss! I got it. Whew, all right. What else?
Laugh.
Apologize. A lot. They do that a lot. You say vent? Yes. Hard to communicate there. What else? Listen, especially when the apologies are happening. Forgive. Cherish. There you go, worship. Wow, that doesn't even look like worship. Okay, have fun. Quality time. You say compromise? Okay. Compromise, I don't know where to go with that, okay? Yeah. All right, I'm going to assume, nobody's actually said the sex word out loud, but I'm going to assume that kiss and affection and hugs and cherish and all of that, that sex is in here somewhere. In a healthy marriage, that should be happening. And I'm going to assume that when we're talking quality time and some of the other stuff that's here, that dates are somewhere on the table. What else? What with each other? Honest. Honesty with each other. Absolutely. A couple more, and then I'm obviously out of room. Support and what? Yes. Support. And they have the right kind of disagreeing. I'm going to put on here fight, but what I mean that in a positive way. They know how to solve conflict together. Okay, how many of you in this room are married? I've got 1, 2, 3, 4. That's 2. I didn't see Danny over. There we go. Okay, I got 6 married people in this room. Okay, and I, a little less funny, let me legit ask this question. How many of you would say that you come out of a family where when you look at your parents' marriage, you say, that is the kind of marriage that I want someday, the kind of marriage that my parents have right now. How many of you would say that? All right, I'm going to give that about 30, okay? So I have a handful of married people in the room, and I have, out of probably close to 300 people in the room tonight, we've got 30 that would say, yeah, I grew up watching a marriage that would be good. That makes you officially a terrible audience to ask, how do I have a successful marriage? Okay? No offense, but it really does. Because it's not like I have 300 people sitting here who have healthy marriages who can say, this is how it works. But you're right. Isn't that weird? You're right. You guys know how to have a successful marriage. I mean, I didn't do a very good job writing it on the screen, but all of those things are absolutely true. You know the concepts of what it takes to bring two people close to each other. So why is it, if you guys know how to have an awesome relationship, then how come some of you have messed up relationships, or you had messed up relationships, or you haven't gotten it right yet, or you're worried that you might have a terrible marriage? It's because, you guys, there is a huge difference between knowing something and doing something. And when we're talking about a relationship, it's that much harder because we're talking about the difference between knowing something in theory and putting it into practice with a real human being, which is awesome and worth it. But it's hard. It's hard to put these things into practice. It's hard to know what apologizing really actually looks like because there's all of these other things going on. There's all these other nonverbal communication and all this other stuff. You with me right now? There's a world of difference between knowing about something, which you do. These are right and these are good. But there's a big difference between that and figuring out, how do I have a thriving, awesome, beautiful relationship with my wife, a human being? We both have our own issues. So how do we get across that? Well, I hope you see the parallel, because I don't think it's too crazy. So look, I could do the same thing, and the only reason I won't is just for sake of time. I could do the same thing to say, how do you have a thriving relationship with God? And I believe that you guys could fill this screen with beautiful stuff. But if I asked you how many of you feel connected to the Father on a regular basis, my guess is the answer would be the same, where a few hands would be like, yeah, I believe this looks the way I want it to look. There is a mile-wide difference between knowing and putting some things into practice. So I want to nudge you tonight to put some things into practice like Jesus did. Because he's the great example, right? And his disciples actually asked him this question. His disciples asked him the question, hey, Jesus, we heard that John the Baptist taught his disciples how to pray. Would you teach us how to pray? And Jesus did not say, no, too busy. He said, yeah, here's the lesson. And he launches immediately into the Lord's Prayer. And it's important to note that when he started the Lord's Prayer, I mean when he started talking about the Lord's Prayer, he said these words, pray like this. He didn't say pray this. He didn't lock us into this one prayer forever, even though we've kind of done that. He said pray like this. Say it with me. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who have trespassed against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Okay, here's the thing. If Jesus did indeed say, pray like this, then I have to look at that prayer and I have to make it my own. That's one of my pieces of homework for you guys tonight, that I want you to do that this week. But let me show you how I do it. And again, much like I'm talking about my relationship with my wife, and some of the stuff that has really worked for me, I can't counsel another couple to do because they're different people. And so I have to look at the concepts that are good in my relationship with my wife, and I can encourage somebody else in that. Are you following me there? But the thing that worked for me won't necessarily work for them. In your relationship with God, it doesn't matter if your best friend is an awesome journaler and that connects her or him with the Lord in an amazing way. That might not be you. You might not be that person who writes out every prayer that you have during the day. And that's all right. But let me tell you how I can make this prayer personal for me. So I'll just do it line by line, okay? Hey, God, thank you for your goodness, for being a good dad, for looking after me as your son. When I look at the second line, God, help me to see my family as belonging to you today, not just belonging to me. Let your will be done in my family. Help me view everything around me today as something that you care about. Open my eyes to the people around me who need your words and your help, our daily bread. I trust you to provide what I need today, God. My money, my food, my relationships. Thank you that you've given me enough time to do the things that you've called me to do today. Please forgive the anger, the lust, the selfishness that I've let creep inside of me today. Help me give forgiveness to the people who've been short-tempered and selfish with me, because you've so freely given me your forgiveness when I have been short-tempered. Help me not to make decisions today, God, that flirt with sin. Keep me far from that. Thank you for your sweet deliverance for me in grace. It is all yours, God. You rule over everything. So let it all be yours today. I'm yours today. That's a Ben Miller version of Matthew 6, 9 through 13. It's not yours. But I want to challenge you this week to grab Matthew 6, 9 through 13 and make it yours every day in a different way. Just one time. That didn't take us very long, right? In 60 seconds, you can sit down and you can pray. You can do what Jesus said. Teach us how to pray. He says, I'll give you this, Matthew 6, 9 through 13. Pray like this. You see gratitude in there. You see honesty and vulnerability about our sin in there. You see us asking for God's help in there. So the three applications that I want to give you tonight are this. Pray Matthew 6, 9 through 13 in your own voice this week. That's number one. Number two, eliminate what's competing for your time and your attention. If prayer is turning our attention toward the Lord, then what is it that you need to turn your attention away from? I'll give you a hint, okay? It might have something to do with this. And this isn't because you're millennials and everybody blames everything on millennials. This device has changed everything, and it's a beautiful gift. But it also carries with it, it's just a medium like any other medium is. And it can be used for good, it can be used for bad. But you've got to figure out how this doesn't control you, and I have to figure out how it doesn't control me. When I was doing some research on the sermon, it was kind of funny. I came across this app that was called Forest. There's the icon for it right there. And here's what it does. It lets you, as soon as you install it, it asks for some special permissions because it kind of gets into a lot of your phone because your notifications kind of come through it. But it's you set a time within the app. You open it and you say, you know what? I don't want to be on my phone for the next 30 minutes. And you know what it does? It puts a little icon of a tree on the front of your phone. And if you want to get back in and text somebody, you're welcome to. You just have to kill your tree to do it. Okay? Isn't that fantastic? It'll ask you, are you sure you want to kill your tree? And you have to kill your tree to go read your text messages or whatever else for the time that you set up. If you let your tree grow the full way, it's like, and I'm not getting any kickback from Forrest. I just thought that was genius. If you let your tree grow the full way, it plants it in a little fake forest, and you get to see how many trees that you've got there. Now, you can do the exact same thing by just powering down your phone for a given amount of time. I just thought that that was incredibly creative. But I'm asking you, what is it that you need to turn your attention away from to turn it toward the Lord? Jesus found a solitary place, you guys. He found a secluded place for a reason, and I have to tell you, I think they're hard to find. I got six kids. Do you know how hard secluded places are to find in our home? They're very hard to find. That's your second challenge this week, is to turn that attention toward the Lord. It's a relationship, and he's a person. So you, in prayer, checking your notifications and scrolling through whatever social media it is that you use, he feels the same way you do when somebody does that in front of you. And he's not petty, but there is a different kind of relationship. I got to tell you, that would not fly if I was on a date with my wife and I was sitting there doing that. OK? Okay? I would be finishing that dinner on my own. As a matter of fact, there was a commercial that infuriated me a couple years ago, actually maybe last year, for, I think it was NFL Network. Somebody was advertising it, and it just played all the time. But it was a guy sitting on a date with his wife, and he's watching the game underneath the table, and then she would say something meaningful, and he'd like cheer, and she would think that he's in the conversation with her. And it was like, hey, dudes, you can do whatever you want. You can watch football under the table. And it was a little funny the first time I saw it, and by the 10th time I saw it, I was like, man, that's ugly. Like, that hurts a little bit too much to be funny anymore to me. Because I get it, but it's kind of just a tired meme to me of the disinterested guy and the relationship, you know? What do we do to turn our attention to the Lord? What does that look like for you? It looks different for you than for me. Are you willing to figure it out? I can't preach that. You have to do it. You have to make application with that or it won't happen. The third one's pretty simple too. We're told in Psalm 46:10 that God says to be still and know that I'm God. And there are so many things that you're going to miss if you don't do that, that you never will know happened. Annie Dillard, who's basically a poet, I guess I would call her, she had this quote which just struck me last week. She said, beauty and grace are performed whether or not you will sense them. The least you can do is show up. Beauty and grace are going to happen whether or not you perceive them. The least you could do is show up. I'll tell you already, and this sermon's right at me too, beauty and grace are happening around you. The question is, do you have the awareness to see it right in front of you? And so your third piece this week really is talk to God, but also create space to listen. There are things that he needs to do in your life. The Holy Spirit, in my experience, doesn't speak loud often. He certainly can, and he sometimes does, but I have to tell you, usually he will not fight for your attention. And there are times in this kind of prayer where the Holy Spirit will bring people to your mind who are hurting. You should pray for them. You should reach out to them. That happens in the silence all the time. When you pop your earbuds out on the way to class, and you start looking for people who might actually need some encouragement and some prayer. Church, we got to break out of our own selfish blinders and lay ourselves before the Lord and ask him what his priorities are. Grace draws us into knowing his voice, into having a relationship. And I know that some of you love silence and some of you dread silence, but I think it has to be a discipline in your life for you to dive deep. Not just snorkel on the surface. And you'll see other people down there who are experiencing things. And you'll want it. But there's a cost to having it. That's what I want for you. I want you to have scuba diving experiences this week.